Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Project MedTech. I'm your host, Dwayne Mancini. As always, if you need anything from the podcast or would like to suggest a future guest, please email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. And you can always visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, or follow us on LinkedIn. My guest today is Kyle Rose from Rook Quality System. In this episode, Kyle and I discuss what Rook Quality System does and how they can help, quality system basics, where to start when building one, importance of a quality system as a startup company, how to build a system that can scale with you, and more. So without further ado, my discussion with Kyle Rose.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion.
Kyle, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks a lot, Dwayne. Thanks for having me. Very excited to talk today.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, you're the president, founder, CEO of Rook Quality System?
Yeah, definitely. President is the main title, but yeah, okay. I founded the company, self-funded, kind of bootstrapped it myself. I originally started the company. I had worked in med device for a few different companies. I worked kind of super hands-on for a diagnostic company, doing some manufacturing, and then got more into the quality side and liked where quality was at, and then went and worked for some bigger companies in their quality department and kind of saw how things, as you grow, can get super inefficient. It can take months and months to, you know, approve forms, sign validations, things like that. You're chasing people around. So kind of got the idea of, you know, wanting to start consulting, and the idea that being quality systems was something that I could support companies and give them some knowledge and understanding of how to make the process more efficient, how to improve their quality system and improve the quality of their devices as well. So that was kind of the idea from the start of the company back in 2012, and really around 2016, 2017, became my full-time 100% gig and have grown the company from there.
Awesome. Really cool. It's a really cool story. So do you guys go by RQS or, and I've seen this
before. Yeah. So Rook Quality Systems is a company. We do Rook QS is the official website. So we use that quite a bit as well. And then RQS is another abbreviation. So all the three, I was talking to somebody yesterday and it was like, there's abbreviations everywhere in medical device stuff.
Right. So you just went along with the theme.
The CAPAs and DHR, DMR, you know, all that stuff that we throw out all the time. But yeah, so Rook QS, RQS, all of them are pretty common. Yeah.
Awesome. And what was the website again? It's RookQS.com.
Yeah, RookQS.com. Yeah.
Awesome. And then in terms of clientele you work with, so it's obviously med tech, but is it startups, small companies? Do you work with all of them or?
Yeah. So we originally, you know, started primarily with startups. So early on, we got set up with some incubator networks here in Atlanta. So we're based in Atlanta, tied to Georgia Tech, and then also more involved with the Holter program at Georgia Tech and Emory. And then we started to branch out with some other incubators in the Southeast area. There's a really good one in Memphis called 0 to 510. It's an old name. I think they've updated it since then. And then the TMCX program in Houston, we've done a lot of work with them as well. So our main focus has been startups, small companies. But then over the years, we've also gotten some big companies as well. So some of the biggest companies in med device, some of the biggest companies in the world that are also getting into med device are some of our clients as well. So we do both, you know, a lot of startup heavy stuff, but getting into big company stuff as well.
Okay. And what's the size? How many employees do you have?
Yeah. So right now we have 17 engineers that do the quality system consulting, auditing support, electrical safety, software, you know, wide range. So we have the majority are here in Atlanta. We also have consultants spread out around the US. And then we have a small branch in Taiwan as well.
Right.
Led by Andrew and takes a lot of our software stuff, but also, you know, helps with the whole Asia market as well, and that time zone as well.
Okay. Yeah. And Andrew has been on the podcast. He'll be not released yet at the time we're doing this interview, but he will be one or two episodes before you. So very cool. Okay. Awesome. So let's dive into quality system, right? So this is something that comes up a lot, right? So if I'm setting the stage, something that started happening 5 years ago, we'll say five-ish, was startup companies had to answer to investors about reimbursement, right? Reimbursement became a really hot topic. And then I would say like 3 years ago, a lot of startups started getting this pushback on their quality system, right? Especially startups whose end goal is an exit to a large strategic. And pretty much what was happening was strategics were acquiring companies and then getting burned when they had to integrate this subpar quality system into a quality system that, you know, Medtronic or J&J or Stryker have to maintain to manufacture devices. So that's the stage, is if you're a startup, you have to think about a quality system. But maybe kind of talk about the importance of thinking about it early. I mean, let's just start with the basic. Let's answer this first. Yeah. What is a quality system?
Yeah, no, a very high level quality system is a set of procedures and documents that outline how your company meets the requirements, whether it's the 21 CFR requirements for the FDA or the ISO 13485 requirements for international markets. It's a set of your internal procedures on how you meet these requirements of creating, designing, and potentially manufacturing or distributing a medical device. So these are specific for medical device companies. You know, one of the questions we always get is that they're not optional. Like, you have to do these. It's not an option. It's mandatory. And there's a lot of nuance to this as well. So the scope of medical device covers all types of things, from Band-Aids to defibrillators, right? Hardware devices, software devices, you know, electrical devices that combine both. So these regulations and quality system standards are pretty broad. So it's important that you kind of review these and actually make them specific to what you're doing. Because if you don't have a sterile device and if you don't have an implantable device, you don't need to have all the paperwork for that if it doesn't meet your company or your need. So high level set of procedures that describe how you design, how you manage your training, your employees, your suppliers, all of those types of activities.
Okay. Awesome. So the one question we get a lot is when I'm talking to startups, especially when I'm talking to startups about, you know, hey, these are some of the things you need to start doing. And I bring up quality system, and a lot of times the response is, well, I'll build it as I go. I can't have it restraining how I'm designing your product. I'd like to get your perspective on why you should at least be considering a quality system from the very beginning.
Yeah, no, I think it's the question we get a lot as well, is, you know, when do we start, all that type of stuff. And I think we've shown from our personal experience working with a lot of these super early college, you know, still in a college lab or something like that, and getting quality systems in early, it really helps you focus what you're designing and helps you focus toward whatever the regulatory or testing requirements you would have to do, whatever your potential predicate is. It really helps you focus and determine, you know, we need to build it with these materials or build it for this testing, so you're not really wasting time. I think that's the biggest thing with the startup world, is the time is one of the most valuable resources. So if you go down a path and you realize, you know, we didn't plan for a year of shelf life testing or 8 months of clinical trials, then that's really going to throw off your budget and potentially, you know, destroy your company. So we think, and we've shown with all types of companies, that getting this information started early on, at least at a high level, our main thing is trying to keep the quality system and the design and risk activities as efficient as we can, but still going through the exercise of identifying, you know, what you need to test, what your timelines are early on, it is super beneficial for all startups. And we've also been working very closely with the RADx program to get all these diagnostics to the market. And same idea, these companies have no idea about quality systems, but when you start to put it in, it helps to move them forward in an actual, like, documented regimented fashion to get towards clearance.
Okay. So the myth of putting in a quality system too early is going to restrain product development. That is a myth, correct?
Yeah. I don't agree with that. Right. I mean, you can still develop your product. You don't have to dive super deep, but you know, documenting the things at the high level of what you need to test, what you need to plan towards is always going to save you time. Right. Okay. So, you know, the actual effort to writing this stuff down takes a few hours potentially versus, you know, wasting months and months and who knows how much money if you don't do it from the start. So,
right. Okay. No. So how do you, you kind of hinted at it on building a quality system that can scale with you, but how do you actually, you know, start that process?
Yep. And that's something we've done kind of all along is really this idea of like a pre-market quality system that's really just focused on the activities that you're doing in the development phase. So this is kind of for like a new startup, new device, new idea, right? It might not even be a company yet. But starting with your high level documents around design and development, around risk analysis, around document control, and then supplier assessment, I think is a big one as well. So all these activities, as you're starting to do some design, do some testing, you want to conduct risk analysis as well to see if there's any risks you haven't accounted for. And then supplier side as well, you know, we can't just say that it's our supplier's fault something went wrong. We have to have regulatory responsibility. So make sure we have agreements. We've vetted our suppliers to make sure they can make medical device product, whether that's hardware or software, I think is very important as well. And it's a lot of steps that people skip on the supplier side. But yeah, the pre-market side is the main focus, especially in design and development. As you get closer, you'll roll in some more like manufacturing focused procedures, things like incoming inspection and acceptance activities. And it depends on how hands-on you are with manufacturing, if you're doing it in-house versus like a contract manufacturer. And then as you get closer to actually either submitting this to the FDA or putting on the market, you'd want to roll out all your post-market, your complaint handling, recall, all of those types of activities.
Okay. Makes sense. So from someone who understands nothing about a quality system, right? I've never implemented one. I mean, I understand what they are, but I see things out there like Greenlight Guru, Viva, just to name a few, right? What are those pieces of software? Are those like out of the box quality systems that you can implement or what are
those? So those are an electronic QMS tool that helps you manage the quality system.
Okay.
So depending on the tool, they will have different features. Pretty much all of them have electronic storage and electronic signatures. Okay. So it's really the idea of moving from a traditional paper-based where you're, you know, physically printing out documents and signing them with, you know, a startup world. Now it's not very realistic to have all that done by paper. So there's a lot of different tools that try to make this more efficient. Some of them are specifically for med device and some of them are more broad for other industries as well. And some of them do provide templates on the quality system, but even with that, you still need support. The best kind of example I like to give is that would be like a QuickBooks, where you still need some sort of accountant or bookkeeper to go in and actually manage the data, generate the reports for your monthly reporting, generate all of the information you actually need to file for the IRS. That's the same idea as how Rook works. So we work closely with all of these electronic QMS tools. Our team would work in them with your company and we'd help manage all the data, create the templates, make sure, same idea, that you actually have the things that meet what you need to do. You're not adding requirements for sterilization if you're a software company, right? Mm-hmm. So having all of these things properly set up in your quality system and then having our team, you know, manage your design and risk activities to get your device in the right place and properly documented, it's still required even if you're using an EQMS. So if you've never done quality systems before and you buy an EQMS, you'll still need a lot of hands-on support to get everything up and running, and then get it in the place it needs to be for your submission. So we work in that relationship with a lot of companies, and that's really, you know, made us more efficient as well, right? When we first started, they were mainly bigger companies had it. There wasn't as much of a startup focus on the EQMS, and, you know, it allows us to be much more efficient. Our team has always been remote, even pre-COVID. We've always worked from home. Co-working offices, you know, Zoom meetings has always been our standard. And really EQMS has made us, you know, much more efficient at doing that. So I can work from my couch in somebody's quality system in Ireland or anywhere else around the world, right? Europe, Canada, you know, we have clients all over that we're managing their quality system through an electronic QMS. It makes us more efficient. We're not having to, you know, fly on site for all these meetings necessarily. It's great. And it works great in audits as well, right? Being able to show this stuff, have it all easily accessible, and you're not, you know, going through your file cabinet every 10 minutes to find a record.
Sure. So, So is there a time where it makes sense, you know, so you're obviously working with some of these small startup companies, you're consulting with some of the larger ones, but for a startup company, at what point does it make sense for, you know, if I'm Dwayne Mancini LLC and I have this product, at what point does it make sense for me to actually take my quality engineers and bring them in house, right? And say, okay, you guys have gotten me here. Now though, at this point, we need full-time associates to own this. I mean, is that a transition that commonly happens? How do you prepare for that?
I think that's something that kind of depends on a case by case basis. A lot of companies, you know, and part of the reason I started Rook was to bridge that gap of kind of pre-market design all the way till you need, you know, a full-time quality team. And for a lot of companies that aren't familiar with quality, they don't realize that, you know, quality teams at big companies at Johnson & Johnson, Alcon, they're as big departments as any other, like R&D or, you know, their quality department has hundreds of people in them. So these departments are just as big. So you'll eventually need to put in that many resources as you continue to grow. But our working relationship with a lot of startups is we are able to actually manage their entire quality system for them for quite a while. Like they can be, you know, have product on the market, have multi-regions, and we can still manage that remotely. I think one of the big advantages of doing that with Rook is it's hard to find somebody that's able to do kind of everything. Whereas we have a team of software engineers, auditors, quality system focused engineers, international expertise with, you know, MDR or MNSAP or whatever market you might be looking at, as well as labeling and validation, all of these things. So we can kind of bring in the certain engineers that need to support different phases of your project, rather than trying to find one person that can do all this themselves and manage it all efficiently. So a lot of times, even when companies hire somebody full-time, we still manage support and provide training and advice and strategic review and stuff like that as well.
Right. So just the relationship with Rook Quality System might change a little bit. Right. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. So one other question I have in relation to the quality system is when you're working with some of these startups at a very, you know, early stage, they're probably still pitching, they're probably still raising money from investors. Are you seeing, I know strategics are heavily focused on the quality system. One thing that's been unclear, at least I've received, you know, different feedback from different individuals. It's not as clear cut as, you know, the investors are like, you got to have reimbursement. Yep. If you don't have reimbursement, we probably don't need to talk to each other. Yep. Are you seeing that with quality system? Do investors, you know, push that quality a lot? Cause I, you know, with investors, like if you scale this back a little bit, the reimbursement piece is how that company is going to get paid and how that investor is going to get their dollars back. A quality system, you know, I think they look, basically I've heard from them that they look at it as like, well, that's just another cost. I don't know if it's adding a ton of value, but then I'm sitting there like, Well, yeah, because the only way you're going to get your money back is if you exit. Yeah. And if they don't have a good quality system, they're not going to exit. So have you seen investors paying a lot of attention?
Yeah, to that, I think it's definitely the ones that are experienced specifically in med device or in the industry
understand
are the ones that definitely understand the value behind it. And I think it's some of the people that coming from like digital health or software or traditional investment side that might not understand as much of the med tech, med device space, mm-hmm. and therefore don't necessarily understand it as well. So it's a learning curve to try to, in some cases train and help them understand why it is critical. It's not optional, and it really does improve the value of your company. And we've seen, the majority of the people that we discuss and interact with are like, as soon as, you break it down, like, oh yeah, this is definitely adding value. It's saving us time, saving us money, reducing the risks that we completely ignore some aspect of the device or have a recall or a warning letter at some point, right? So all of these things, help build the knowledge and understanding of that, this is critical. And I think you touched on it earlier as well. If you are looking at getting acquired by a bigger company, they'll do a more intense audit and review of your quality system than the FDA ever will, right? So
wow. Okay.
Whoever this company is, and we've been involved in quite a few of these that, they're coming in to review because they're going to be the ones, paying for it. They're going to be the ones responsible. They want to make sure you have all your design activities buttoned up, all your quality system, all your risk analysis, all your manufacturing, all of this has to be in place. And they'll do very thorough audits on their side before they, want to invest their money in the product.
Okay. What about the integration of a quality system, right? Like, this has to be a difficult task, right? I mean, or are people building, here's a more direct question. The difference between building a quality system that you can actually grow versus building a quality system that needs to be integrated into, we'll just use Medtronic as an example. Oh. Is that different or are they the same? I'm curious there because.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I wouldn't recommend planning it to grow into something else. I think from our experience, in some cases, the bigger acquiring company will still let the smaller company work in their quality system at some point and then transition, just the idea that the smaller company quality system is typically more efficient than their excess layers of sites and tape and corporate governance and all that stuff. But at some point it does have to be integrated. Right. So, but typically they're having their transition team help you through that process, everything into their quality system. It definitely something just, making sure you're doing it properly, meeting the requirements.
Yeah.
It is the biggest thing. So.
Okay. It makes sense. I mean, cause I think a lot of people will say, oh yeah, well, I want to be acquired. It's like, yeah, I mean, I get that, but what if not, then you're probably just going to die on the market. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. Just from planning things too, a lot of times, plan to take your product to market. If you get acquired along the way, that's great. Right. But you have a plan that you're going to take it all the way through. And that should include obviously your quality activities as well. So
sure. Okay. Awesome. What other advice? It doesn't have to be quality related. Just, you're working and it can if you want it to be, right? Or more, but you work with startups daily. And for the last several years. So, what's your kind of best advice, tips? It could be tips. It could be, the number one place you see companies fail at, anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it ties a little bit to quality, but just the idea of, formally documenting what your goals are, what your timelines are, and how this relates to, whatever testing or manufacturing activities you need to do and building back from that timeline. So, if you want to submit or be on the market, say in Q2 2022, then you need to kind of backtrack. It's going to take 6 months for the FDA to review. It's going to take 2 months for us to test. So you need to kind of build in all these timelines and properly plan, right? You can't just say a month before, which a lot of times companies reach out to us and say, hey, we're ready to submit, but we don't have anything documented, right? And we're like, well, there's a whole lot of stuff you have to do before you can put the packet together, right? So really kind of planning ahead, you know, a year and a half in advance to start formally documenting this process, getting your testing completed, getting your prototype manufacturing done. There's going to be, you know, all these startups, there's always hiccups along the way. There's always things with manufacturing or design that didn't work exactly like we thought it would. So just having a master timeline, and this is how we work with a lot of projects as well. Ours is mainly focused on the quality side, but having a master timeline or Gantt that says, this is our goal, this is when we need to submit to get on the market, and then backtracking everything from there, I think is the biggest thing. And that's sounds simple, but a lot of times, you know, just with startups might not necessarily have a ton of business experience. So it's definitely something to, you know, focus on early on and then check your progress every month as you're going.
Okay. That makes sense. So when you hear regulatory quality, I think sometimes people initially think like those are two very separate things. What's the difference? How do they interact together? You know, how do they work together? Because when I was talking to, I really realized when I was talking to Andrew, it was like, well, you do a lot of stuff that a regulatory consultant could do. And sometimes I hear regulatory people talk, I'm like, well, you kind of have the same discussions I have with quality people. So what's the relationship? What's the differences, similarities?
Yeah, I mean, I think they definitely go hand in hand, especially within the scope of like a startup that's getting their first device on the market. Okay. You really need to have your regulatory path or plan established. And then the quality side is the activities of, you know, formally documenting your design, formally documenting your testing, writing protocols, executing testing, whether that's internal or external, all of the actual kind of hands-on documentation, risk analysis, supplier agreements, assessments, all of those are typically considered in the quality bucket. And then as you get these final reports ready and your testing is done and you've passed everything, then the regulatory side is the one that kind of puts this all together and in the right format for the FDA, completes all the forms, and makes the argument around substantial equivalence in the case of a 510K device. Okay. Then, you know, typically once you're through the FDA, the regulatory side is not as heavy, right? As long as you're not making any major changes to your device. Okay. But the quality side gets even more involved. But now you're potentially manufacturing a device, you have to validate your process, you have to test your device, you have distribution and traceability and all these other activities that you're maintaining. Now that people are using this new device for the first time, you're going to get complaints, you're going to get things happening that you never anticipated. And so you have to properly document, investigate, you know, make changes to your device as needed. And that's all kind of heavy, heavy quality side as well. So they work closely, especially in the kind of startup side with your getting a device market first time, there's a lot of overlap. And then kind of quality takes over. And as you make device changes, then you go back to the drawing board, say, hey, does this affect our regulatory clearance type thing? We also get a lot of people that just think it's the same thing, which it's not either. So a lot of times, you know, Rook will team up with a regulatory consultant as well to help, you know, we'll focus on the quality side and we'll team up with another regulatory consultant on the regulatory side.
Okay. Does the quality system or the quality engineer, does that go into a submission for the FDA or is
not
that more?
So not all of your quality system, you're not submitting the actual procedures. You're not submitting all of your design history file to the FDA. It's certain subsets, mainly, you know, the test reports, the design files. If you are doing a software device, then a lot more of that gets put in there. A lot more of your early requirement definition, your risk analysis would go in your submission. And that's where we are pretty hands-on. If we do any regulatory submissions, it's more on the software SAMD-based devices. Because you know, so much of that is just purely software documentation that typically we're pretty hands-on. And this is mainly the focus for the FDA. Obviously, if you're an international company, it's a little backwards where they actually are backwards compared to the US. I think it's better process, but they actually audit your quality system first before you're able to put the device on the market. So they're actually coming to your site and doing a thorough audit of everything, all of your quality system, your training, your supplier assessment, all of these activities before, and then also doing the technical review of your device.
Okay. Do you work with class one products as well? And what is your advice for companies who have class one products? Because something that I see, at least, you know, back in my NAMSA days, was I went and visited a few facilities that were class one products, and I saw their biocompatibility profile of what they had for their device. And I looked at it and said, if you ever get audited, you are screwed. And is that, do you see that sometimes with class one products from a quality system perspective?
Yeah. I mean, occasionally we'll talk to companies and we, you know, we have plenty of clients that are class one, but occasionally they'll get the attitude, oh, we don't have to do any of this for class one. Yeah. And, you know, as a class one, you still have to register, you still have to maintain a quality system. There's certain devices that are exempt from certain activities, but you still need a good amount of documentation.
Yeah.
And even this kind of EUA process has put a lot of questions into that as well, because in the certain EUA templates, you can exclude certain activities around quality system and design activities. Our process still is, you know, I don't know how you can properly make a device and guarantee it's safe and effective without documenting and testing and doing risk analysis. So I always, obviously, quality consultant, but I always lean on the, you need the quality, you need it documented. You know, we might try to streamline things for a class one, but you still need a formal system. You still need to be documented. And we've had, you know, plenty of clients that have been through the process as a class one and gotten audited by the FDA, mm-hmm. With their first go around or a previous company. And they're always the ones that are like, we have to have you, we have to have this done. You know, I don't want to go through that again of having the FDA show up and have nothing.
Right.
So, you know, the ones that have been through it before definitely understand the need of a quality system as well.
Okay. Awesome. That's good to know. Wow. I can't believe we're this far into it. Anything else that I've missed that you just want to touch on quickly? I mean, I think I asked all of my initial questions I had, but
what I about think you? One of the things we get questions about a lot is the FDA audit process and how that interacts with the quality system. So,
okay.
Like I said, typically you're not getting audited before you're putting the device on the market, specifically in the FDA. So you'll submit your 510K or, if you're a class one, you might not need to submit anything, but you're registering with the FDA. And then typically we see anywhere from 1 to 5 years after that process, you'll have an FDA audit. And this is where they come in, they review all of your quality documents. They're in person reviewing your records. It's less about, you know, how does your device work or them going into the field to see it in action. It's more of all of your paperwork on how you manufactured it, how you tested it, all those activities. So it's important, obviously it's properly documented, but then again, it's also, you know, a requirement. So if for some reason you're not doing this, it can get escalated to like a warning letter or even, you know, more severe. If you're ignoring the FDA's advice, you can go to jail and get your company seized, all these types of activities as well, right? So we have met the criminal side of the FDA, and it's a real thing. So, you know, it's
okay.
You are, you know, planning that you are going to get audited because it will happen eventually as well.
Okay. Good to know. All right. Awesome. Well, Kyle, I really appreciate this. I appreciate your time this morning. Hang on the line for one more minute after I stop the recording here. But in terms of getting a hold of you, so it's rookqs.com. Are you pretty active on LinkedIn?
LinkedIn as well. We're active on LinkedIn, different webinars and events coming up as well. We've got software conference in Europe coming up in October, and then the Advanced Life Science Conference in Charleston end of October as well. So hopefully getting out and about with some conferences coming up again. So
cross our fingers.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think, you know, if you think about parts of the industry that were most affected.
Yeah.
You know, COVID is a big one, right? This the COVID affected startups at such a big level, because startups, you know, a lot of these large industry leaders, they're already in the industry, they have the contacts, but startups, there's always a new wave of startups coming into the industry. And if they don't have those connections, they can't go anywhere, right? You have to have these connections. And a lot, for a lot of these startups, those conferences were where they met people, where they met service providers, where they met investors. I mean, that's where they met everybody who's going to help take their product to the market. So I agree. Hopefully we're back into those in-person meetings here again soon. But again, Kyle, really appreciate your time. There'll be links to your website, your LinkedIn, Rook's LinkedIn, all in the show notes. So if people want to connect with Kyle, they can. Again, thanks so much for your time. And
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.